Welcome to Webcology. Webcology is the show that takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Our guides will take you on a journey into web marketing and bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world. Now, here are the hosts of Webcology, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome to Webcology on WMR.fm. It's the 10th of February, 2022. This is Jim Hedge from Digital Always Media and Dave Davies from Weights and Biases, located in San Francisco. Dave is the lead SEO of Weights and Biases. And you know, it's really cool having done this show over so many years, announcing our own career changes.
Yeah.
Dave, congratulations. You are the lead SEO. I've known there was changes happening in your career, and I've purposefully not asked you a lot about them because I didn't want to say something dumb. We do our show live to podcast. So had I known something, I might have said something. But now you're saying it out loud. What's up? What's happening? You're the lead SEO at Weights and Biases. What's Weights and Biases?
They're a machine learning operations company. So basically, they build the tools, and regular listeners won't be surprised that this is an area I'm interested in. They build the tools that machine learning engineers use to train models. So, you know, tracking hyperparameters, you know, visualizing, you know, just visualizing their models, helping with reproducibility by like tracking and logging runs so that, you know, if something went well once, but that person's on holiday or has quit the company, you can easily go back and figure out what's going on outside of spreadsheets and things like that. So it's a lot of fun for me. And I get to read a lot of obviously interesting information, right? Like, you know, being their SEO. It was a good time. I worked for them for about 9 months ahead of that as a contractor. They just made me an offer I didn't want to refuse.
Congratulations. That's wonderful. It's going to take me, it might take a couple of intros or exits to get it right, but Dave Davies, lead SEO at Weights and Biases, man, congratulations. And it's an exciting chapter in not only in your career, but in your just overall personal learning arc. That's just really, really, really freaking cool.
Thank you so much.
Another really, really, really cool milestone career thing. Barry Schwartz, we've got to get this out of the way early and often. Barry Schwartz hit a milestone that I don't know if anybody else will ever achieve this. But earlier this week, Barry published his 30,000th article in Search Engine Roundtable.
That's crazy.
Admittedly, at least 18,000 of them are about Google updates. That's untrue. But 30,000 pieces published over a 22-year career or something.
Yeah.
That's mind-bending.
It is. I think the only thing that eclipses it is the number of times we've referenced him on our show.
Indeed, quite probably. But the neat thing is Barry publishes in a couple other places too. Search Engine Land is an example. He's published at least 1,000 pieces there. And he had published at Search Engine Watch before it, possibly another 1,000 there at some... Just again, a phenomenal contribution to the community. We mentioned his name over and over and over again, but there's a reason his name gets mentioned over and over and over again. Yeah. Anyway, congratulations and thank you, Barry.
Thank you so much.
So it's been a long 2 years. been a hard 2 years for business. But it's been a good 2 years for the business of SEO, apparently. Joe Hall put a Twitter poll out asking people in the SEO community how the pandemic has changed business, has this brought or hurt business. And 614 people responded. 83% said it's been brought more business, and I don't know, but 17% said it's brought less. Definitely made. I hate to say it, but I know it's not. I've noticed that big time.
Yeah, so have I. And it's interesting when you look at those stats and it's like, oh, I guess about 18 or 16.8% of our sector specializes in like restaurants and events, like, which would make sense. But it's like, yeah, there's very specific local things that I'm like, yeah, you probably got devastated, right? Like where you would think you're, the industry you serve got devastated. So you in turn got devastated. You know, you work as an SEO for airlines, right? Or something like that. But yeah, the rest of us, like people in e-com and things like that, fares very well.
I remember at the very beginning, it was incredibly disruptive. There was a couple of weeks where I think most people were wondering what was going to happen next, if they were going to have clients, if their clients were going to remain in business or what have you. I lost a bunch of clients at the beginning. Like you said, they serve specific sectors that were just got hammered, tourism and travel, local. But in the long run, I've had a very mellow pandemic when it comes to, or not mellow, but I've had a very busy pandemic, but I haven't been worried financially during it.
Yeah, it's one of the interesting things, and it does make sense. Like when you think about sort of what we do, and all of us, I think, spent the first couple months panicked, right? Like just sort of like, I don't know what's going on. And, you know, like I had a lot of clients in travel, right? Like it was like, oh, okay, this is a thing. And fortunately that storm got weathered. And then once you get through that, it's all of a sudden like, oh, okay. Like actually there's more coming in than I can handle. And those friends of mine who are like complaining about how bored they are making puzzles on CERB, they're irritating me now because I've got too much to do. And there's just too much demand. And it's one of those, and I'm sure you remember it. And hopefully I wish, you know, those 16.8 had been in the same boat, but where you're like, I can't say no, cause I don't know when it ends. So I have to say, yes, I can do it. But at the same time, that means that the last remaining 5 hours of free time that I was going to have to myself next Saturday is gone.
Busy. Oh, certainly. I haven't gotten quite like that. I'm certainly turning aside or referring lots of business to other people's. Absolutely. But I think... I think the wariness around the paid market is easing substantially. I think Google's doing quite a bit to make working in the paid market quite easier. We'll get to that, and I think in a few minutes of the show. But I see a lot. I do see more money moving into back into paid. Mm-hmm. But at the beginning, people weren't going to make bets on paid when they didn't know where the world was going next. And once you start the SEO journey, it's awfully hard to stop it. Makes no sense. Once you've already invested, you don't de-invest in it.
Right. Well, and that journey into paid, I mean, for anybody who remembers, and I think we talked about it last week, the Google's Q4 report. people have gone back into paid. I think it was like 60-something billion dollars or something, like up 30-something percent. I can't remember the exact numbers, but it was like massive, massive growth year over year. Of course, part of that will be like it sort of like tanked a little bit. I mean, for them, tanking is less growth, right? Like it's a weird one where it's like it was down, but it was only down off with the like massive like multiples of growth that they were on. And now they're sort of catching up to where they maybe would have been had the pandemic not happened. But
you've often complained about the completely weird and absurd valuations in the tech world, like just how stupid things get. Google, I remember Google is one of the first companies, this had to be back in like 2006 or something, that taught us a lesson when they grew. They put demonstrable growth, but they still lost value, lost mark, or they missed the analyst call. The analyst expected more from them. And so investors walked away, even though they had posted like a huge amount of growth. They made a whole bunch of money. And I think that was one of the points where everything started to twist, like, you know, metal in an ice storm or something.
Yeah, and I remember the event you're talking about. I remember how humorous I found it at the time, where I was just like, it's really the only company. Now, I understand enough about that side of economics to go, we're betting our money on this happening, and if something less happens, then it's worth less than we were gambling on it being worth. And I'm, you know, just referring to playing that side of the stock market, that sort of like day trading s kind of stock trading. So I view that more as gambling. It's not good or bad. It's just, it is gambling.
It is how it works. Yeah.
You're betting on quarterly reports or something instead of, you know, who's going to win the Super Bowl. And the answer there, by the way, for listeners is the halftime show is going to win. But yeah, I still find it kind of interesting. Now, I go back to like when you and I were starting this show, like sort of 2006, Dave, who didn't actually understand enough because the industry was actually fairly young. Like, I mean the tech industry. I don't even just mean like SEO as an industry, but like tech, like
everything.
Even Microsoft, more time has passed than like Microsoft had been around, I think, like, or very close anyway. Like it was really, really tight. And the internet was just sort of becoming like a regularly used thing. Now watching, say, the likes of Google and going, oh, I get your valuation back then because you were worth that. Like now, like by standard measures, by like if Ford did the same thing, like just like people build a thing and it actually has a tangible value, sort of like valuation of like based on your productivity. You're sort of gambling on the future in that one, but in like a more, I guess that's not really gambling if you think a company's going to do that well, or it is, but it's less than like say day trading and quarterly report trading. But you know, watching sort of how Google evolved or how Shopify is a great example too. It's like, okay, I'm starting, like I understand the valuations a little more. I think some of them are, but still very inflated, where it's like, oh, I don't know what people are seeing in that, but that's more a, I guess, take on things. I sort of do understand a little more some of the valuations. I think the bubble has to burst still, but I do understand a little more where, because I've seen companies now cross, like where I thought something was an absurd valuation, and then I watched them 5 years later cross that. And it's like, oh, okay, you're actually producing now what it would have taken you 5 years ago, and you're still growing. So people 5 years ago were gambling on 6 years from now you. Yeah. Sort of thing.
As long as you keep delivering. Now, not a cool thing about Google. They did that. They did that. Was it a 20 or 30 to 1 split last week?
Yeah. I think now they think that kicks in because it still has to pass some like.
Oh, indeed, it's on their books, and that's they're splitting their stock. They are making so much money. Their value is increasing so rapidly that the smartest thing for them to do. The smartest thing economically, both for their shareholders and to continue increasing the value of those shares, is to split the stocks into something that the average person can afford again. Mm-hmm. Thinking of bets, you know, treating Wall Street or the horse races, or Wall Street like the horse races. This is a career bet. People in the SEO and PPC have been made on something like Google, and that's a good indicator. Damn good lead indicator. Now, back in 2006, and we were all much younger, and Google was much younger, and people using the web were much younger. And well, at least the old edge of people using the web was much younger back then. Today, you might notice larger fonts in your query bar. And that's because Google appreciates you, Dave. It appreciates me. It appreciates us because we are the lead demographic now. That's why you hear all those 80s and 90s tunes and commercials, and why the halftime show is going to be so damn amazing, because we are the demographic. So that's why the font in Google search query bar is just a little bit larger now, because finally, screw you, boomers. We're important.
We probably are a pretty heavy user base of them. And I think, like, you know, I've got a camera, right? And they've seen me on my phone. They're like, yeah, he wears glasses. So,
yeah. Anyway, Google's testing. I don't know if it's going to stay or not, but if you do see the fonts jumping around on your monitor when you're doing a Google search, the size of the font, it's not the microdosing. It's Google's experiment. This one was really cool. Yeah, Chrome Journeys. Did you hear about a new add-on you can add to? I think it's kind of neat. Used to be that you had to remember how you got from point A to point B. Use a bunch of information in between. Chrome's going to make it easy to follow your own personal journey through a website. $5 says, I guess it's introduced in a much grander term way to a Search Console like 6 months from now.
What did you think of it? Like when it first came, like, okay, let's go with two versions of Jim. Jim reads the title, and we've all made decisions based on a title. It's why, like, heck, Twitter's just littered with it, and I've been as guilty as anybody else. So there's that version of me when I read a title. And then there's the version of me when I actually, like, dove in and figured out what it was. Like, actually, like, read the article and then they're right up. What was did you have two different views of what it was before and after you sort of, like, understood what it was meaning to do?
Often. Where are you going with this?
Oh, no, I was wondering on this story specifically, because on this one at first I was like, ugh. Like, I instinctively thought, like, as soon as I see Google do anything with Chrome, my initial thought was like, just don't. Just, like, it's a browser. Just leave me alone. just let it be my browser, right? Like, that was my instinctive, like, because I didn't really know what they were talking about.
It's not your,
like,
browser, just silly.
Leave me alone. What I want it to be. But then I read into it and I'm like, oh, they've actually got, like, a lot of functionality. And the write-up over at SE Roundtable was good. But then following the link further over to the write-up that they did about it, it's very, very interesting, letting you, like, sort of take your journey, but then they're also adding in, like, or capabilities into Chrome itself, where you can just type in, like, you know, all those things that we have to do when you want to go into setting, and it's like Chrome colon, but, like, or whatever, like, you're putting in these, like, complicated things like into Chrome, like, complicated, like, heck, I still have to, like, look them up to go, oh yeah, right, how do I do that directly through, like, the address bar? Now you can just have, like, share this tab is one of the options, or, like, view your Chrome history, or, like, one of their examples, play Chrome Dino game, right? Like, you can just now start to put these commands directly in there, and Chrome will understand that it's you asking Chrome, not you asking Google, which that I find kind of interesting as well. So there's just some neat functionality. But when I first saw it, I did have this instinctive, like, I don't like this. Like, just whatever it is, it's my browser, and I'll put an extension if I wanted to do something different. Just leave me alone. But then when I read in a little deeper, I'm like, oh, this is, like, it's like a perfect thing. It's like just adding a functionality that doesn't detract from any functionality that I had and doesn't get in my way if I don't want it. Mm-hmm. I was actually pretty pleased with it.
The first thing I thought of when I saw this, and then why I was curious where you were going with your lead in, was, I'm, you know, like anyone who's working in the e-com space, I'm absolutely fascinated with the user journey.
Yeah,
a user goes into a page, at a landing page, does a whole bunch of stuff, decides to convert or not convert, and leaves again. That's neat. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff that happens in there, and decisions that are made. And my first thought was, so Google Chrome is going to help us figure this out. No, it's going to help me figure out my journey through, you know, different information threads. But, like, as you said, just let my browser be my browser. You can't really do that with Google Chrome, because it's not your browser.
That's true. That's very true.
Google's pretty explicit that this isn't a browser. This is a platform, and it's our platform, and you're using it. And everything you do while using it is kind of like running around our property.
Right. All your data are belong to us.
Yeah. And it's a different relationship than I think other I don't know if Microsoft or Safari are, if Edge or Safari are collecting the sheer amounts of data that Chrome collects. I don't believe they are. They might be. I honestly don't know. But I do think it's a different relationship when you're on Chrome.
Yeah, well, and they can't, because they don't have as many, like, what Google collects from the fact that I wander around with an Android is is astronomical. I'm sure. One of the things I'm really interested about that I am just thinking about while I was like looking through the sort of story, like, you know, I pulled up the page to look at it, and suddenly it occurs to me, and I'll be interested to know if somebody could automate it, but I'm going to try and do this manually a couple times, is what if I go to like look through the analytics of a site that I'm working on, do a path that's very, very common to the average user, and then go back into my history and go, when Google goes recommended searches, what do they think are my recommended searches based on what I'm doing that's replicating what my user is doing? Like, if what would Google think my user's next best thing would be? And that might yield some interesting information. By next week, I'll have done that to at least, you know, a couple dozen different sort of like flows through the site, and I'll get back as to whether it yields any interesting information. But it's like, right, I can actually not just be me, but I can go through a site as somebody else, or go through a process as somebody else, and then go and see what Google makes of that.
Don't forget to try to emulate the same results in the mobile environment too, right?
Right. Oh yeah.
No, seriously. Google in Search Console, you are now able to get unique desktop and mobile environment results and measurements of the healthier site that hasn't ported over into Google Analytics as a default. You can still use secondary settings to isolate traffic from here, traffic from there, this or that aspect or whatever. But there's no like one-click easy segmentation that I'm aware of in Analytics yet. But in Search Console, it's almost like Google is recognizing there's absolutely two environments that they're playing in the mobile first thing, and assuming everything was going to be mobile might have been a mistake. Do you get that feeling? Like, Google's not said that outwards at all yet, but do you think they're conceding a bit on that?
I think, yeah, I'm not sure.
Because everything will be run through the mobile environment eventually. It's inevitable. Yeah. Everything must get smaller. It has to work that way.
Yeah.
How the mobile environment outputs later, like how these little teeny computers in our pockets output information and how we relate to that. And this is where Brasco, our producer, really badly wants us to start talking about the metaverse.
Yeah.
And he's absolutely right. We're goofy not to be immersed in the metaverse given, but the whole thing is, what's it going to be? You know, like what direction do you choose to research yet?
Well, indeed. And I mean, it is one of those things. It's funny. I was just watching The Matrix and it wasn't thinking like we went through the whole series and then watched number four. And it's not that one, but it made me think of other movies where, you know, you would see that all of a sudden now they need to hack something and they're like tapping on like this invisible wall in front of them. And
you know,
basically this is sort of faux metaverse sort of comes up. But while I think that's kind of ridiculous, like, no, you're not going to have this like combination lock sort of floating in the air. Like, that just doesn't make sense.
Well, how about
that
Minority
is the next logical step to what's sort of going on, is a much more immersive environment. Mm-hmm. Like, why would I actually be sitting here with three monitors, a widescreen monitor? Like, why do I have all this stuff when
just
a pair of glasses could cover the same thing if it was high enough resolution? Yeah. Right. So, you know, I think that is the direction. And I think Brasco is 100% right, because I know what you're talking about. And he keeps like sort of sending us little things like we should talk about that. He's 100% right, because it is the next natural.
This is the network giving you a hint. Talk about this. but again, it's where we're going. Yeah, it's the next step. And you know, I promised Jim Boykin next time we interviewed him, next time we had him on the show, we would be doing it in a ninja's environment. Like, he's recreated the SEO ninja's worldscape. I promised him that we would meet in there. So yeah, perhaps we will.
I hope to. And something that I'm actually surprised, like as we're talking about it, is I don't know if you remember, we've talked about it in the past, Google Cardboard. Mm-hmm. Like, just a simple like cardboard costs like $6. You can make it yourself if you want. Just this little like device, and you put your phone into it and now you can like view things in 3D. I'm still surprised that concept didn't in some way take off. I use it all the time. I make cardboards all the time because it's a great way to go like, I want to remember this spot, and it captures the sound, and you can look in like 360 degrees and sort of see everything that was going on at the time. And it's a little, I mean, it's not, it doesn't look real, but it's a much more immersive thing. I'm still surprised that one didn't take off a little more because of the astronomical low barrier to entry. We all have the device to do it.
Are you looking for the best in WordPress speed, security, and scalability? WP Engine is a digital experience platform for WordPress, powering digital experiences for large brands around the world. With easy-to-use site management tools and powerful do-it-your-way development features, WP Engine gives you the flexibility to build it your way. Improve your SEO and conversion rates with a faster site on WP Engine. Learn more on WPEngine.com.
We just need a like $6 piece of cardboard with like a couple screens in it. But
Google.
Yeah.
Marketing.
Yeah.
I suppose. Yeah. just didn't work. Google serviette. That's where they write their marketing ideas on, but they keep forgetting them and throwing them out with the cutlery. Okay. Happy, joy, joy. I think it's the best lead in to more messages for webmasters from Google Search Console. If you notice the messages Google sent to you, like their updates on your website are just the happiest, most optimistic things they could send you. You had 5 visitors last month, an increase of 200%. You're a winner.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So there's going to be more messages coming from Search Console and more advice on how to deal with stuff. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm pretty happy when I read Google stuff telling me how good my clients are doing while I'm looking at them going, you could be doing so much better.
Right.
Like, yeah. Seriously, I don't
and
like
knowing your messages. Clients probably getting that same email from Google going, good job.
That's true.
No, it is like it's funny because I did a tongue in cheek, like when I'd seen it, I tweeted it out going, oh goody, more messages. Right. Like, but it's probably one of the few channels that I'm like, yeah, give me everything you got. Right. Like, it's like Google telling me about my website. I'd happily filter through 9 useless things to catch 1 useful. So
that is true. Although, when they're extracting the very most optimistic stats from any given report, from any Google Analytics report, it gets, you know,
yeah,
a little hollow.
That is valid. And, you know, on the topic of Search Console, just a PSA for our listening audience, and this is going back to last week, but then the announcement just came out a few days ago, that data between the first and third, they had an issue with performance reports data. Didn't impact your rankings. Like, if you see things going up or down or whatever in there, it didn't actually impact your rankings. They just had a problem with their data. And so if you didn't notice that, like, that's like a little alert that's in there. It's
you
not
will
you,
see
it's
a notation. I saw a notation was created in Search Console accounts.
Yeah. And thank goodness, right? Like, it's great that they do that. So I just thought I'd mention that because we were on the topic of Search Console, and I'm like, oh yeah, right. We should let people know just in case they happen to now be going back to Search Console to see what we're talking about. They won't panic when they see that. Although in retrospect, because we're now so far past, they'd be like, oh, well, I tanked and then I'm okay. Like, or something like that. Like, oh.
Something you said, you will look at messages from Google. You'll look at like 10 of them, knowing that 9 of them are probably, you know, silly garbage, but one of them might be a little gem of information that's important to you.
Yeah.
John Mueller gave out a little piece of that information the other day in one of his responses to what seems like a really innocuous question. It was on product reviews. And somebody asked, you know, what are the best ways for Google for me to do a product review? And one of John's answers was use original photos. Cool. Mm-hmm. But the reason he said use original photos was really interesting. He said because a Google algorithm update is rewarding deep research content.
See, I didn't read that, and that's one of the most interesting things I could have read this week.
It was in Search Engine Journal the other day. I was gonna pull the article up just a sec here. It was a Search Engine Journal piece written by Matt Southern, published on February 8th, so 2 days ago. Google rolled out an algorithm update last year that's designed to reward product reviews with in-depth, firsthand research. To benefit from that, to use unique content beyond what was available from the manufacturer. Now, that's in the realm of product research. But take that a step further to the content that you're writing or creating for your clients. I think John said, we will reward you for taking that extra step. He certainly will in product reviews.
And doesn't that just synchronize with everything they keep telling us? Like, I mean, they have, like, again, I'm just going to note this for listeners who might not have heard us say it 100 times. EAT isn't a ranking factor, but like, if you want to pull from that and go, they are building ranking factors based on some of the signals that they would get. And that happens to relate to expertise, authority, and trustworthiness. This is how you send those signals. Right? Like this is how you go, I have something that a user hasn't seen somewhere else. This is how you differentiate what you have and what you're offering from somebody else. It's one of the reasons, in my opinion, that Amazon does so incredibly strongly. They do have some manufacturer stuff. And heck, you need the manufacturer stuff. When we've got like the length, width, and height and weight of a device does not change just because Amazon wrote it. This is just stock stuff. Like it needs to be there, but then allowing all of these reviews, allowing photos to be added in there of the product and like allowing all of that is what elevates it and goes, oh, okay, this is where you actually get this. If we don't provide that, if we're just like, well, here's a photo that I found describing the exact same thing I'm talking about. Let's just drop that in there. And I'm just going to regurgitate what I've read on Wikipedia. Why would I possibly want to go to you? And thus why would Google care? Now, what I don't know is how good is Google at doing that, at differentiating between these two things. I mean, stock photos, that's easy enough. But you know, how good are they with the content side?
Well, they've kind of built their business on adjudicating content for I don't know, at least 20 years. I think they take it kind of seriously. 45 years now, they take it kind of serious. I think they can. Google can't tell what is fake and what is not fake. Although they can, but they can't. You know how you can't say with 100% accuracy, mathematically, that the sun's going to rise tomorrow morning.
Right.
I mean, you can, because the sun is going to rise tomorrow morning. Even on a cloudy day, the sun is still rising. But mathematically, you just can't say that, right? Because yeah. She's getting comfortable saying it. That's what I mean when I say Google can suss out what is verifiable and not verifiable. It can, but you can't say that it does with 100% accuracy. But it's pretty damn good. And there's so many signals that it can grab onto. Say this has merit. This is probably silliness. It doesn't judge the information if somebody's looking for it, but Google knows.
Right.
Google still serves up conspiracy theory, but not silliness.
Well, and I don't blame them. It's funny. A few days ago, well, not funny, but a few days ago, a friend of mine that I work with, Ivan, had put out what's one of my favorite machine learning pieces. He was playing around with GPT-3. Wanted to do an experiment on it. Let's get it to write Doctor Who summaries. Like, let's get it to read the entire episode, crawl the web, come up with a summary of itself. Now, I don't know every Doctor Who episode. I've watched many of them, but I don't know them all. Now, he does, so he was able to detect which one's false really, really fast. But put me through it, and I was looking to see which woman. I got probably about half of them wrong. I did not know which one was right. That's just odds. There were only two choices. So that's just like coin toss level accuracy.
And this is a machine writing the content that you were judging.
Right. Based on having read the sort of script itself and then training itself on some other descriptions of that episode and then just creating one for itself.
That's a really, you know, your friend Ivan, if they could publish that experiment or experiments like that to the web and then throw ads around it, they'd make $1 million. Because I know I do. I'd spend all day on a site like that. Seeing how messy my perceptions are against machine learning. Absolutely.
Well, I will mention that to him.
Okay. Well, I want $5. I want $5 a day. Just like Wordle. Okay, where are we going next? The Google APIs, Google Ad API. Google's introducing a new programming interface for people who work in the AdWords world, except your AdWords API itself. The old API is expiring April 2022, so real soon. Google Ads API 10.0 is out. Amazing increase in functionality and information that Google gives you. There's a piece in Barry's SEO roundtable. If you're using the old API and you weren't aware that it's about to expire, it's about to expire.
Good heads up. Yeah, I guess I'm lucky. Most of the API connections that I use with ads are just related to like pulling data into like Data Studio or something, right? Like I don't use it to push or make changes. I just use it to, through tools and other tools. So I'm lucky. I have nothing to do. I just have to count on all of the providers like Supermetrics and stuff to keep up on these changes and which I'm sure they are. And make sure a little plug for Supermetrics there. Now everybody knows I use Supermetrics. Making sure that those connections are in place for me. But anyway, I did sort of scan through that list. I'm like, wow. And as we were discussing, I think it was last week, they just added in Performance Max, into what can be retrieved and into some of the other interfaces and the reporting systems, just front-facing right through their regular interface. So I clearly they're trying to make it easier to become more transparent. While they're doing more and more in a black box, but at least they're showing us which black box is doing better than another more easily.
Indeed, this black box will make it easier for you to work here. And this platform will make it easier for you to use these black boxes. ultimately, most people who say built a website in Wix or even WordPress don't know how Wix or WordPress built their website. Right. They just know that they did this, and this, and use it like a word processor and follow the instructions and all of that, and a website was put together somehow. Mm-hmm. Let me retract that. There's a lot of technical stuff that goes into building a website. I remember when we used to build them by hand or using really crappy CMSs like Acrobat and stuff, or Go Live or whatever. That's what this reminds me of, though. It's making it much easier for people to participate in what used to be a rather complex environment.
Yeah, and one of the things that I like about it as well, like not only is it easier for people to use it, but it's easier for managers to report it, right? Like the more they can pump in through their API, the easier it is to go, okay, here's one place. Like when all of a sudden we can access all of the data through Performance Max more easily. It's like, okay, great. Now we can just include that in Data Studio so that now that the client just has one place. Like Data Studio, I use, like you can do like a monthly scheduled export to PDF that gets emailed, right? Like it's a great thing to actually just use for reporting. So making all that for managers a lot easier, I think is a big perk as well. And not to mention that like now all the tools like for people who use like a lot of the tools to simplify their lives, we'll be able to do a lot more with it. So yeah, I think it's good for managers and just people who want to do stuff.
And you know, I'm glad you mentioned that. One of the first things that we learned, you and I both, under the tutelage of Ross Dunn, was reports are everything. Reporting is the gold of your SEO career. It's what keeps you going. Yeah. And I always forget that because I like doing the work. I love doing the work. I don't like taking the time to, explain it. I mean, I do, but it just takes so much time. And anything that builds reports for you, that gets the data together in a presentable manner so that you don't got to do it yourself. Because remember the early days when you actually had to build reports yourself?
Oh, yeah.
We're looking at 2 or 3 hours per client per month just in telling them what's going on.
Yeah. And now you can just do it. Like I just have them like auto send. And then I follow it up with an email and go, oh, by the way, like here's some context. Like, but now I'm just providing the context, which I think is huge. It's exactly what you started talking about. Like of that 3 hours, about 15 minutes was put in context. The rest of it, because you know the context off the top of your head, you did all the work. It's actually diving in and going, okay, here's a screenshot of this. Here's a screenshot of that. Here's like, you know, it's great. So if I can,
yes.
I'm gonna defer it because I feel sorry for Google people. And that happened twice this week that I was just like, oh, I can hear the sadness in your tweet. Like I can actually hear how sad you are from having to say this on Reddit, right? Or whatever it is. So that happened to us twice this week. So interesting questions it got asked. One of which, and John was even surprised with some of the information he found out when I tweeted this one out going, this is kind of sad, was Google's had to let people know, this was 2 days ago, code to text ratio is not and has never been an SEO ranking factor.
Like, God, I saw that.
Yeah.
What
I was like, oh.
What? Who? When?
Like, I do get, and it's funny because somebody came in going, in defense of the asker, it is in a lot of tools. Right. And that's true. And then John was like, which tools? Like, basically. Okay. But I do understand that because I do sometimes look at it and go, if the ratio is too far off, it's not a ranking factor, but I need to really look at how much code it's taking to produce, like to put that content on a page. Like,
is it an elegance thing? Maybe they're judging quality by.
I'm not sure what the idea behind that would be, but that's a new one. And then John yesterday, like, so 1 day later, links with UTM parameters.
Yes,
so you know UTM parameters, right? Like this is just how you go, you know, source, channel, contact,
yeah.
Like, are not by default paid links. I'm like, I don't even know how you would think that. Like if you understand UTM parameters, like clearly you don't understand UTM parameters to be asking. And I'm not trying to dig at the asker. I'm not going to mention who it was. But it's just like, before we ask questions, we should do just not just try and look up the direct answer, but go, maybe I actually need to understand the technology I'm talking about. Like maybe I need to go, what's a UTM parameter? Like, and if you just went to a UTM like generator, you'd actually end up with an answer.
It would be polite of people to do that before asking the question.
Yeah. Because I could just, again, like just see John so shaking and go, well, that depends. If you have like, you know, medium is CPC, then yes, it is. But if the medium is organic, then it's organic. Like it's like I don't. And if it's nothing, then I assume it would just, I don't know, if it can't detect what it is, just spit it into direct or something, right? Like I don't know what it would do if like you didn't have that in there and it doesn't know where it's from. I don't know, just dump it in there, but it would treat it as same as any unknown content. It wouldn't go, oh well, it had a UTM parameter for this, so it must be paid. Like. I just don't understand. Like I use UTM parameters all the time though on all sorts of different like
I should hope emails. Indeed. Stuff, so. Of course you do. Like and you know, some content management systems just add them or some analytics systems just add them to make tracking possible. it's mind blowing that questions like this.
Yeah.
I just really good confession time, dude. When you're like on Facebook or something, and you're copying and pasting a link, do you sometimes cut off the UTM code just to spite the other guy? I know I do. And I feel bad about it.
You know, sometimes I do, but also sometimes I'll strip it out to do a favor. Like, because if sometimes, like, I get a feed, right, where it's like, and it's from, like, I don't know, Search Engine Journal is part of, like, the feed that I look at to stay up on news. Well, they've added in their parameter, but it's related to the RSS feed. But now I'm sharing it on Twitter. So I've actually removed it often in those cases to go, oh, okay, you're going to misattribute this to the wrong thing. So I'll strip that out so that you just get the regular UTM parameters that you would from my Twitter stream. So.
I was just doing it to thwart tracking.
That's fair. There are times that I'll tack on UTM parameters onto, like, redirects that I've, like, bought, that I'll, like, domains I bought that I'll redirect to somebody and just have, like, Dave is being a pain in the butt, right? Like, UTM parameters.
Actually, so. I've seen those. Okay, we are rounding the corner. We've got probably about 5 minutes left. If you're over at Search Engine Journal, Christopher Jones wrote an article on SEO for Amazon. If Christopher Jones writes it, says it, implies it, or even looks at it in a weird way, stop and notice, because Chris really knows what he's doing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I haven't read it yet. I just found out about it 15 seconds ago. But
go take a look.
Like, I'm not even doing Amazon, but I'll go and read it because
indeed. Hey, that's smart. I was just thinking the same thing. I never spend time on Amazon. I kind of resent the existence of Amazon to begin with, but Chris Jones wrote it, so I'm gonna go read it.
Yeah.
Okay, here's another one up the same creek that you just traveled. Dates in title tags. Don't make a difference. Google don't care. Not gonna help you, not gonna hurt you. Probably going to make your title tag longer than it's going to be completely read or displayed on a search engine result. But at the end of the day, don't make a huge difference. Similarly, and this one was neat, actually. What if you're, like, publishing a news source, or you have a page that tracks stock, and the price of the stock is the value is part of the title. That's what your users want to see in the top tab when they have a number of tabs open. So your title might even change numerous times a day. Is that going to screw up your SEO efforts? Mueller answered this question, and that was a good question.
That is a really good question.
No, it won't, because your SEO efforts are a snapshot in time. Google is checking its cache of the web, not the live web. You may not have strong results for the exact phrase, including the evaluation as it was at that snapshot point. But no, it's not going to screw up your SEO at all.
Hopefully that person that's doing it with their stock numbers is not seeing it up in their, like, top monitor like I have and going, oh, it's that, and then buying it without looking refresh on the page.
Be aware, if it's appearing in a top tab, or in a tab on a browser, it's a title tag, not an actual indice. That never occurred to me. What else? We got a couple of minutes. I think we have time for one more. I know that we have a hard stop in the studio at the top of the hour. What else do we got here?
Well, I'll just a fun one that's, like, sort of in my wheelhouse to sort of end us on. Over at Google AI, shocking. A couple of days ago, they launched what I think is just, like, a perfect next logical step in robotics. And basically, they are training models now to teach robots not how to follow a set of instructions, but to watch a human being do a task and then complete that task based on their own unique physiology. Like grabbing a handful of pencils, I have four fingers and a thumb. Now, a robot with just two pinchers is going to do it different, but understand what the task is and then figure out the best way to do it. This is the first time that's happened, but I think it moves robotic training now from just the sort of realm of scientists and roboticists and machine learning engineers onto, okay, they need to get the software in there, but now I can teach it how to do dishes, right, in like my house and stuff. So, I mean, it's still first level technology, but that was a big leap forward that I think we'll be talking about probably a couple of years from now as it evolves.
Absolutely. Especially if we're doing it in the metaverse. That's my mind goes to, I actually don't even know what to say next, because my mind has gone to three or four different places at the same time. That's phenomenal.
It is. And fortunately, it's okay to be, it's okay to be, to be stuck, because we've got to close out.
We do. My very first thought on that was the game of hockey is going to change in phenomenal and most interesting ways because of stuff just like that. We got to go. We are at the top of the hour. There's an absolute hard stop in our studio. So, friends, you have been listening to Webcology on WMR.fm. On behalf of Dave Davies from Weights and Lead SEO at Weights and Bias, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. Stick around WMR.fm and go and get yourself vaccinated. And by the way, you freedom idiots, get off those damn bridges. You're not protecting anybody's freedoms. You're just being dummies. Stay well. We'll talk to you next week.
The opinions expressed in this WMR.fm program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMR.fm. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.